The next case to be heard this morning is number 2008-1231, Target Corporation versus Greene County Board of Revision. As it appears that the counsel for the appellant has not appeared this morning, we'll go ahead and hear from the appellee, Mr. Ray.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Nicholas Ray. I represent the property owner in this case. The property in question before the court today was originally owned and occupied by Target Corporation and its predecessor entity, Dayton Hudson. It was built to Target specifications and at all times has been owned and occupied by Target or its related entities. At no time before, now, or is there any intention in the future that this property would ever be subject to a lease. The property owner in this case challenged the value of this property as of January 1st, 2005, and before the Greene County Board of Revision provided the appraisal and testimony of Mr. Curtis Hanna of Integra Realty Resources. As detailed on pages 8 and 9 of appellee's brief, the Board of Tax Appeals has provided considerable attention to these types of commonly referred to as big box properties. In all of those cases that we've cited, the Board of Tax Appeals accepted the appraisal report and methodology provided by Integra. For reasons unknown, the Board of Revision, in the face of that precedent, still refused to accept the appraisal report, and an appeal was taken to the BTA. At no time has the auditor in this case provided any information to support its value or in response to the appraisal information provided by Integra. The challenges raised by the appellant in this case are simply not supported by Ohio law or sound appraisal practices. And again, the goal here in this particular case, just to make the clear distinction, this property, again, has not been leased, has not been subject to a recent sale. It was built in 1998, has been owned and occupied in that entire period of time.
And what's the year at issue here again?
2005. Since both the facts and the law were clear in this case, the appellant, again, the property owner before the BTA, waived hearing and submitted the matter on the record. The BTA did the obvious, predictable thing, followed its precedent, and held for the property owner in this case, finding that it had met its burden to establish the value and that the appellee counties had provided no information in response. The appellants before this court, the county, argues that there was some impermissible shifting of burden. The shifting of burden in this case is the same shifting of burden that's really the bedrock of American jurisprudence. The appellant before the court had a burden to establish. The BTA found that it did. Once that finding is made, there is in every case, a shifting of burden to those who would offer contrary information, and none was offered here.
Let me ask you a question. One case that the county cited in its brief was that the Meyer case from 96, and that cites a couple of earlier cases, the Dinner Bell Meats case and so on and so forth. Does a case like this invoke that idea of the special purpose or specialty property? And if not, why not?
No, again, and there's much discussion with big boxes because they are unique to the individual, in this case, Target. But at the same time, there are, as demonstrated by the appraisal report, there is information available that indicates that there's alternative uses for these properties. They're not a single-use property, which you may find the typical example is something like a museum in the appraisal literature. It's designed to be a museum. That's really what it's there for. These are retail properties for first generation users, and much discussion here as it relates to first generation. for first-generation users, those first-generation users are interested in their prototype property. But there are significant second-generation users which really define the market for these types of properties. The arguments raised in this case are directly, by the county, directly refuted in our brief in the appraisal of the expert in this case. There are a considerable number of articles that are included with Mr. Lorms's appraisal, Mr. Hanna's appraisal. And most recently, and actually this just was published by the Appraisal Institute in its appraisal journal, was an article in the winter 2009 appraisal journal. Begins on page 56, Your Honor, and it directly addresses the valuation of these types of properties. That article from the journal is directly refutes the arguments by the appellants in this case and supports the appraisal report of Integra Realty Resources.
I think the intuitive point that the county's trying to raise is that if that the proper this property presumably is a, and I'm not sure there's really any evidence one way or the other. The county hasn't presented any evidence, but presumably maybe a going concern target store, and it's being compared to properties that are sold out of bankruptcy, Kmart and Ames properties. And but your point is nonetheless that that is the appropriate approach for the appraiser to take.
It is. The use of the second generation properties is addressed in our briefs. It's also that journal article, if I could, directly addresses it, and it quotes on page 60, the best support for components of both the sales comparison approach and the components of the income capitalization approach is second generation space that is leased and sold and enjoys the same highest and best use. The properties in this question, if an owner-occupied property is going to be sold, the way it's going to be sold is to offer it on the market. The person who owns it is going to be selling it. So who is the market for this particular property? As I indicated at the beginning, the property's never been subject to lease. There's not the first generation sales that the county would point to are sales of leased properties. And while sales of leased properties are routinely used in appraisal practice, the appraisal of real estate, which is the authoritative book, if you will, for the appraisal practice, specifically addresses the use of leased fee sales for the valuation of fee simple. And again, my citations are 417 and 430 in the 12th edition. In that case, if those sales are going to be used for fee simple interest, the property rights being appraised must be considered. So fee simple versus leased fee and what it reflects. Appraisers are also required to consider the motivation, financing terms, market conditions, size, location, physical features, and importantly, the economic characteristics of the property if it produces income. Well, you have a producing income property, you have an owner-occupied property. In this case, you would have to create a fictional lease of an owner-occupied property and then assume that based upon that fictional lease that the property would sell. That's not supported by appraisal practice.
Well, I guess that recurs to the question that I asked previously about the special purpose or specialty, and again, there's no evidence has been presented by the county one way or the other, but isn't there another approach that has been taken in some of the cases, a cost-based approach, where the property is specially adapted to the use of the current owner?
From appraisal practice standards, if the property were determined to be a special purpose entity, then cost approach comes in. Now, there are times when cost approach is utilized when the market information is limited as well. In this case, and specifically that appraisal journal article talks about, you know, the lack of information does not itself excuse the appraiser from finding the information to value the appropriate interest. There is second generation leases out there where these properties are available. There are users who place value in these properties. It's not the same value that the original user places in it. They are custom built for that user. Wouldn't be unreasonable to think if we custom built anything to our specifications, we run the risk that the market doesn't see it the same way. Whether we custom build our home or whether we custom build a particular property in this case, there is a market value, They're traded on the market. There's evidence of the market transactions for the unencumbered interest in the property. The fee simple sales, where they're used consistently in appraisal practices, there needs to be a consideration of those interests. And certainly, as you've indicated, there's no evidence in this case at all of comparable sales. And additionally, even if there was something offered that was a gross sale price, that in and of itself, without a review and consideration of the items required by the appraisal of real estate, wouldn't be sufficient. The appellants in this case also try to argue in their first proposition of law that the true value in money must be based upon the use of comparable sales that produce the highest possible value for the property. Well, again, the appraisal literature doesn't say that. It says that you need to consider the highest and best use of the property. You need to look at comparable properties that possess the same highest and best use. The goal of shopping comparables to find the highest present value is really part of the mortgage loan crisis that we see today. That's not the role of the appraisal practice. The role of the appraisal practice is to determine if this property in this case was available on the open market for sale. What would the property sell for? It's owner occupied. It's not subject to a lease. You have to assume that the current owner was selling it. As a result, there's not going to be a lease to Target or anyone else of the first generation sellers that would be in this space. Your Honor, the analytical framework, as I wrap up in this case, is clear. The property owner is the appellant, appeared before the Board of Tax Appeals. Based upon the record, it provided evidence that the Board of Tax Appeals has routinely accepted. And again, the arguments that have been made by the appellants in this case have also routinely been rejected by the Board of Tax Appeals. Once that evidence was submitted and accepted by the BTA, which certainly based upon its precedent was not an unforeseen circumstance, a burden shifted to the appellee to provide additional evidence and to refute it, and no evidence has been presented in this case. In its review, this court should not overturn a factual determination as to the value of the property unless it's clearly erroneous. It's not in this case. There's no evidence, even if this court were to decide to step into a role as a super BTA, there's no evidence here that the court could rely upon in any way. Even as it relates to acceptance of the auditor's value in this case and the original value, there's nothing in the record to support the original value that the auditor placed. It is our belief that this court should affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals and find that the value of the subject property as of January 1st, 2005 is $4,500,000. And one additional point that just occurred to me, Your Honor, while I have the time, there was a note in appellee's reply brief, and I apologize, I don't remember the citation, the appellants indicate the appraisers in this case valued the property at $15 per square foot. I'm going to assume Mr. Gorey's not here to tell us that that was a typo, because the valuation was $45 per square foot, okay. Which is a considerable difference in this case. In addition to the appraisal literature, other courts have considered the use of these types of sales. The Wisconsin Supreme Court recently in a Walgreens v. City of Madison addressed the issue of acceptance in that case. The citation there is 752 Northwest 2nd, 687. In the Wisconsin Supreme Court, not constrained by the law that our Supreme Court has been in considering sale cases with the shall language as it relates to recent sales, analyzed these properties, determined that they are not reflective of the fee simple value in exchange. Court should find the same here, not confronted and constrained by the Ohio language on sale cases.
Before you sit down, since you raised the recent sale cases, does that in any way impugn or conflict with the appraisal literature, that you've been discussing? In other words, these recent cases that the court has decided of the sale price being indicative of the market value.
The recent sale cases that the court's decided as it relates to the valuation of the fee simple interest would be in direct contrast to all the appraisal literature that's available. Now, our court has made clear, the court has been clear that it's really just applying a provision of Ohio law as it relates to the statutory language for the acceptance of sale prices. It hasn't really delved beyond there. It's really said if there's a sale, we're done, and hasn't undertaken the analysis. So as it relates to the use of these sales, the court has not, the recent sale cases, really have not addressed it. I point to the Wisconsin case simply because they were not constrained, as this court was, by the Wisconsin statute. And so they entertained a fairly detailed analysis of the sales and whether they were reflective of fee simple value.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. This case will be submitted. The court will advise the parties of its decision.